right. We are back for another episode of Beyond Barriers. Beyond Barriers is a conversation with leaders and community evangelists around the world to discuss the challenges of navigating an effective accessibility strategy. My name is Brian Gavin. I'm the co-founder of WALL-E. And during our podcast, Beyond Barriers, guests get to share their journey around the successes and setbacks with a primary focus on how they've overcome issues that could have otherwise ended their journey. And today, I'm very delighted to be joined by Swarup Biswas. Swarup, thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here and wonderful. You're doing a good thing.
Well, we have a jam-packed conversation, so I'd love to get into things. Let's just start telling me a little bit about yourself, how you got into the space of accessibility, and yeah, thank you again for joining.
Wonderful. Thanks, Brian. So I am Swarup Biswas. I am head of experience design for Hexaware in India and Asia Pacific. And I am an artist. I am a painter, sculptor, and an installation artist, other than being a designer. So about accessibility, I think it's a larger human question. It's how do you treat a human being, the condition of a human being. So we take the normal as we speak, as we see, normal faculties of human being, and we design for that normal faculty. And that's where the structure differs. So if one person does not belong to that normal group, because that number is less, that person is not designed for. And this idea of accessibility, to be able to experience something which, quote unquote, normal people do, then the debate starts. So I think the larger context here is to understand what can be experienced. And is there a democracy in experience? You know, and should there be a democracy in experience? That's a controversial topic. I think we can trade that. We can talk about that much further in design specifically, not only in design, in all mediums, including cinema, including music, including all kinds of fine arts. And because all of it is within the ambits of accessibility, right? So we are talking of everything that can be experienced, including work and career. That is also experience, right? So yes,
so you mentioned,
I think that's the gamut we are talking about.
Yeah, yes, Brian. And there's a bunch of things that you just shared that I'd love to kind of dive into, and designing for the normal. Maybe we start by just defining that, or defining that of accessibility.
Yeah, we just did, didn't we? We just defined it. Yeah. So what is normal? I mean, I think
that's the question I wanted to ask.
Right. Whatever. See, in normal scenarios, in everyday scenario, the larger number defines normal, right? Majority. So whatever, whoever is in majority wins in politics. Whoever is more in majority defines rules. And that's all. Whoever is more in majority defines what should be done for them. They define what is required, and they define what will be in demand and will be paid for. So the base construct of this entire discussion is majority. So it is majoritarian. I think the topic itself is majoritarian, because the numbers are more. The people you are designing for, creating experiences for, that larger number is labeled as normal. And whoever is fewer or lesser number, they are labeled as abnormal, right? So it might not be called as blatantly as I am calling it, But the idea is that, right? The opposite of normal is abnormal. So, well, that is where it stands. But and that's the reason the structure of what you create for each other, for people with different abilities. So there are people who can or cannot do certain functions based on the physical or mental abilities with them. So that is the crux of accessibility. Any kind of content, any kind of ability to work, because we are working on the internet today. We are working, doing, living our life on internet. So it is not necessarily as earlier as entertainment anymore. It is, yeah, you are living your life. You are gaining career. You are ordering food. You are watching movies. Of course, that's entertainment. But everything that you used to do in physical life, you are doing in digital life. So it is not only about entertainment anymore. You are making moves of life on internet. And that makes this factor of accessibility even much more prominent than earlier it was. Brian.
I definitely agree that the digital landscape, that, you know, the first thing I do when I wake up is pull my phone out and look at Slack and see what's going on with the team around the world. So the digital mediums that we all consume are, it kind of provides the ball field, if you will, to level the playing field. But I'm interested in this, you know, the concept of building for the norm, something that, you know, I see from a marketing perspective is persona identification, personalization in the site and digital experience, right? So if you build solutions for the norm, which I think it's, you know, there is a strong argument there, are we seeing the move to cater to and personalize towards the accessibility space because it fits into a broader marketing goal? Or how does the shift in the trend to focus on the accessibility space get picked up? Does it fit into a marketing goal? Is it a personalization effort and an experience effort that aligns to other marketing goals? Or how do you see this, the two points coming together?
Well, I mean, when you are chasing revenues, of course, it will be the revenue, which is the marketing goal, and not the product itself, isn't it? So when you are doing something for revenue, the revenue will be the marketing goal for selling a product or creating a product. Now, if you are creating, I personally believe there can be very profitable ventures around accessibility, but that's my personal belief. And because there is a buying capacity in disabled groups as well, and there is a lot of buying capacity there as well. So we kind of take it for granted that there is no viability or buying capacity in disabled people. Which is absolute misnomer. It's not true. Now, that is one, you know, typical, you know, assumption which we need to break. Second is, why not targeted products on specific abilities? For instance, there are some products out there in the market which is for visually impaired people, specifically designed for them. Now, those are great prospects. And they have, you have seen hearing aids, right? Hearing aid is a specific product created for a specific ability or a lack of it, right? So that is a very, very big market, and that there is a product for it. So that kind of aspect also brings in accessibility. We can also debate the factor where we talk about democracy of content. So I have had other discussions with in the forums where people argue that same content should be available for all to view similarly, which is a possibility to some extent, only to some extent. And that is something which is a thing to debate on. Do you really want that some extent kind of matchability? Now, you have ability to do, you know, all kinds of virtual aspects of 3D modeling, 3D structure, 3D walkthrough, live, real-time rendering and walkthrough, and which is a visually impaired person cannot see. Very simply, not possible.
Right.
And to recreate that with a voice, you will never meet that. You know, having an old alternative text or having some paragraph explaining what is happening on the screen, it is never going to match that experience.
Mm.
Then why are we really trying against it? Why not develop an experience for people who can't see?
Yeah, I mean, one of the major themes that we hear a ton about is that experiential aspect when it comes to accessibility, because it's, you know, the old saying, trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, right? How much can I make my site accessible? And sure, I might be able to say that I'm WCAG compliant because fire alarms don't go off, but the nature in which different abilities consume the digital content and what they want to consume or can consume, it is totally different. So it's a really good debate. And I think also it's something to keep ourselves grounded on, because we need to incorporate accessibility into the entirety of the content supply of the brand, and internal, external tooling and solutions are important. But is it realistic that, you know, we're going to have to worry about particular experiences being available to everyone? One thing, just before we dive, go ahead.
You just said that, right? A fire alarm. Now that is a requirement of life. I am living in a building. It has to be empathetic towards everyone living in it. It cannot just be empathetic to 40 people and not be empathetic to 10 people. It has to be empathetic to all 50 people living in the building. So what, yeah, one person is not matching with other 49, still they have to be empathetic to that one person as well. Reason is, this is not entertainment. This is not just experience. This is living life. And there is a certain amount of responsibility towards every living being when you are providing a solution, and a life solution, mind you. So that life solution, there has to be a way. For instance, technology, if there is a fire alarm going off and a hearing impaired person cannot hear it, so you should have a solution that it accounts for with an IoT, maybe. We have all kinds of wearables people wear. Maybe there is a vibrator on the IoT which relays the alarm which is blaring. All kinds of solutions are there. My thinking is that why not build for them? Build for them. I mean, if there are hearing impaired people, why can't we build solutions for, catered to them? We talked about persona. So this is a specific persona. We are moving into a hyper-personalization structure increasingly as the everyday goes.
Yeah.
And why not we do the same in accessibility?
Well, and I mean, not for nothing, but I know we're talking about the norm and the minority, but some of the stats I've seen is upwards of 40% or more of iOS users have an accessibility preference set. And some of them being larger text, the UI and of the screen can probably accommodate that. But in many ways, it's, you know, it's not responsive, if you will. But 40% is not a small statistic when you look at an audience and a population that you can deliver a better experience for, you can deliver the normal experience that needs to be consumed. One thing, Swarup, just before we dive too in, I'm curious, how did you get your chops and exposure to accessibility?
Well, when you are working or educating yourself in arts or music or any of these fine arts streams, you come across these kind of abilities very naturally. Because there are some people. I mean, I have met with some visually impaired singers who sing brilliantly. I mean, their singing is world apart, and there is certainly some kind of a superpower sorts which they have. With they are able to almost emote with voice. So there is a certain kind of an empathetic structure around fine arts when you are talking with people with different abilities. Similarly, when you start designing, when you start focusing on a personal ability, when I say personal ability, you will be surprised when you speak with different people who supposedly fall under same persona. They fall under same persona type, but they are miles apart. They are different personalities altogether. So we have a system we are developing as we are growing. We are finding more and more structures to create a process of design. But even in that, I am telling you this because we are discussing. Obviously, I won't confuse my design team when I am briefing them on how to design.
Yeah.
Because this itself is confusing, isn't it? So I am speaking with 5 people, all bracketed under same persona. So what is a persona type? So the persona type has exact same age group, exact same geography, exact same education, everything exact. And that's what on the paper they look exactly same persona. Wait until you meet them.
It's like opening up a can of worms.
Yep. And they are completely different people. They consume content completely differently. Their ideas of their political ideas are way apart. Their human connection is amazingly diverse. And we have combined them together under one persona. So, I'm just talking about some challenges as a designer. But you have to have a system. As a designer, you have to have a system because you have to create under a sample size. None of the clients will bear the cost of going to, say, 1,000 people and meeting with them, collecting data, 1,000, 2,000 people. That's a lot of cost, right? So it will come down to a sample size of maybe 5, 10 of a certain persona. Now, I just explained to you how even between 5 people, you have such diverse experiences. I am not even adding disability. I spoke of just normal people.
I'm wondering if the
age is working.
Sorry. I was going to say, I wonder if the age of persona definition is a little archaic, right? Like age and location. I mean, 15 years ago, that was how we were defining persona and handling search relevancy and advertising targeting. Like, I don't know, is it time for us to revisit the definitions? Are we in an archaic state? Like the fact that when you get into one persona, you have 5 unique, like, I don't know, maybe we're missing some of the major characteristics.
We are evolving, Brian. We are evolving, but that is going to take time. Now, don't you think we still define people by their geographies? So if you are an American, you have to be a certain type. If you are a British, you have to be a certain type. You know, if you are an Indian, you have to be a certain type. And there are these kind of specific blocks attached to every prejudice. I mean, there is a certain amount of prejudice attached with all kind of structure. We have to create a definition for a human being. So I think that is evolving as we grow, as we talk, and we understand different people from different geographies and different places, different cultures, different education. You know, education also changes so many things, the kind of education you have. So all of this is kind of hobnobbing together, right? Because of internet, social media, traveling people who are moving around. And when you are sitting, for instance, me visiting your family maybe, and say after a few days of meeting and talking with them, I realize, oops, it's the same. It is the same kind of relationship. It is the every relationship, the mother, father, you know, sisters, spouse, every relationship is exactly same. Their expectations are exactly same. Their way to enact a certain kind of expression or emotion is exactly the same. Now, all of that you realize only when you be there. As long as you are an outsider viewing into that culture, into that thing, you are always on judgmental side. You are creating judgments. So I have that issue with a lot of people commentating as well, because they come with judgments. We are not the ones to create judgments. We are the ones to learn as much as we can learn. Right now, we have been empowered by a lot of technology to learn more, but that technology itself sometimes a barrier to learn. You know, if I keep on lying or keep on blocking my views to certain things that I need to learn about the other culture, I have to make myself go there.
It's kind of human nature, right? I mean, we're human. We're habitats of what's the term? We're your creature of habit, right? Like, that's kind of been the human habit, is to stick to what you know. So tell me this. I think, you know, I'm hearing the persona, and maybe localization is one of these like big macro level issues. But what are some other higher level challenges you see in scaling accessibility within an organization?
See, localization is a big term. It's already being acted upon, and every company is putting enough amount of resources and also willingness to make localized one content, second application, third utilities. So all of these things are happening, and I think we can see that in our normal life as well. The responsibility of catering the right technology and right experiences to people, as you said, which are the critical technologies, like fire safety, like healthcare, like accessing government resources and government provided facilities. All of these things have to be democratic. There is no other way. They have to be democratic, because they are 100% for everyone. There cannot be different possibilities for one person and different for another, because they are two different kind. We talk about democratic values. This is what democracy is, right? The same access to both. Two people with different abilities, still the same things go to both of them. That is my view for critical aspects like healthcare, like government facilities, things to live life. I mean, as in a building, fire safety, must be same for me if I am disabled, for somebody who is fully able. It has to be same. It cannot be two different things. It has to be democratic. Now, for watching a movie, that distinction must be there. Why not create that experience for differently abled people, aligned with their ability? So I have some visually impaired friends who use their headphones to hear a lot of radio theater, radio drama. Have you heard radio drama?
No.
Okay, so these are stories being told by people, and sometimes different characters, only it is audio. There is no visual. So it's an entire theater being enacted on audio. And I enjoy that. There is an app also for YouTube, and you can find that on Google. Try that. There are audio books as well. So books are being read to you. Somebody is reading the books to you and you are listening to it. I really enjoy that.
I pick up more on an audio book and an audio tape than I do reading. I mean, maybe that's just part of my ability. I don't know.
Yep.
Exactly. What's the satisfaction, right? Like,
Yeah, that is something I like. I mean, somebody else might not like it. And that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine. We both have our likings, and somebody else does not have ability to see and read a book. Of course, there are Braille books. But somebody wants to experience the content. Then something being read to them in the ears is such a novel concept, right? And it's a hit. Everybody is using it. It's a huge business element, creating a lot of revenue. Now, that is accessibility business for you, isn't it? It is accessibility business. Well, it's revenues.
It's so interesting because it's thinking about, you know, the democracy of macro level consumption of all people, and then distinguishing the experiential solutions for, we'll say specifically media content. The wearable concept at the democratic level topic of everyone needs to understand there's a fire alarm. Well, how about the folks that put in earplugs at night and can't hear the hearing alarm, but they wear a wearable? It's like, well, that solution is perfectly applicable to the way that might be easier to consume an alarm, just like an audiobook fitting to those that are visually impaired fits me as a person who drives 6 hours on a road trip and can't, you know, I don't have a self-driving car that I trust yet, that maybe an audiobook. So the overlap and benefit to the entire society is there. Just want to transition gears. Can you kind of summarize maybe the biggest success and the biggest setback that you've had in your career when, you know, looking at it from an accessibility space?
Yeah, I can definitely say, see, the biggest stumbling block in terms of designing for accessibility is judgment. See, judgmental aspect. So when we assume something, assumption is an absolute disaster in design.
So any assumption, yeah.
Any assumption, because I cannot experience what is it to not being able to read or see something, because I am born this way. An entire life I have been taking decisions based on my views, my vision, my ability to see things. If I claim that I can recreate that experience of somebody who is unable to read, unable to view, unable to see and appreciate, I just cannot. I am incapable of doing that. If somebody even claims that they can recreate that experience by closing eyes or doing something, Absolutely not. You cannot. It's impossible for a human being with vision to even imagine how it will be if you didn't have the vision.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible. So first of all, our acceptance of that we can't articulate, we can't imagine what other person is thinking. That is the first step. I think most of the designers worldwide, there is an arrogance that we can recreate that experience and we can think for somebody else. I think that's the biggest stumbling block. I have had experiences where this has happened, where the requirement comes as a AA or a AAA alignment, and you go for a AA, okay, you have the guidelines. You go for AA, and you do it, you roll it out, you deploy, and it goes for user testing. And normally what, 50-50? At the most, users are already at a level where anything more than that, they accept. They are at a level where only they are dependent on JAWS, they are dependent of any kind of screen reader, and that's all they expect. As soon as you give them something more, they say, wow, okay, this is better than what I have. So really, you don't have a benchmark. So how do you design when there is no benchmark? The only thing that you can do, you can go and listen to people, be with them, observe them, see what are the challenges. An 80-year-old who doesn't have vision has different challenges than a 16-year-old who doesn't have vision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, getting to the point of just interacting with your audience and interacting where you're making the assumptions is... Yeah, I mean that, but those are such like basic principles. It's just, it's almost like mind-boggling where it's like these challenges, and they're perfectly valid. We've learned to overcome them in so many other normal design practices where, sure, hey, go validate your design assumptions and go meet with a cohort and go meet with a, you know, there's platforms that have launched to go do that, you know, maze, go do your UX testing on specific demographics. So, Swarup, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing the wealth of knowledge. It was an amazing conversation. With that, I want to wrap up, and anyone who listens, please come out. And every week, we're launching additional conversations with leaders like Swarup to help us unpack this accessibility conversation, to get past the judgment and assumption topic, maybe to think differently about your persona definitions. And it's amazing. So, Swarup, before we close out, is there anything that you want to leave us with? Maybe where technology's headed or any topic and point that we didn't get to bring up today?
Technology, I think, Brian, technology is growing rapidly, and there will be enough. I think very soon their sensory technologies are also being worked on, where you can actually create sensors by which you can touch and feel things and create volume, understand and appreciate volume, as well as translate them into digital twins, probably. All that will be reality maybe next 5 to 10 years and so. That is obviously on technology part. But about the design part, I think our primary understanding, as you said, it's the practice has been there for very long. But it is most of the times that our unwillingness to take cost in understanding the human beings in terms of their requirement. I think that is the biggest stumbling block, where we do judgmental design, because one person does not get enough inputs, enough view into what is really required. So that's, I call that judgmental design, and that is the biggest risk today, which kind of lands around what should be done rather than what is really required. I think the design decisions worldwide should be what is really required and find out what is really required. For that, you have to be there, understand, live it maybe for a small duration. You will never be able to understand it 100%. Not possible. You have to live that life. But if you can still reach maybe 50, 60% and be empathetic towards it, not be alien to it, what I am saying, you know?
The empathy piece is something I've heard in so many.
Yeah, yeah. But repeat that. I couldn't hear you.
No, the empathy part is something that comes up in so many conversations. And again, these are like foundational principles, you know, that we learn early on in our professional career that you're reiterating, you know, as an executive is more important than ever.
No, and so, I mean, empathy as a term, as a clickbait is being used everywhere, right? It's a clickbait now. But just imagine, Brian, I'm not in your house or in your office, how I will understand your challenges. I can pretend to, but I will never be able to understand your challenges until I come and you show me, you open your world to me. You know, we live in layers. All human beings live in layers. And somewhere we call that culture. So just because you went to interview a person, you can't understand the deep layers of that persona because that the person will never open up to you. That will never come out.
Time.
Yes, you have to take time. You have to figure out. You have to understand psychology of that persona, psychology of that person. And understand what is not being said. It's easy to go with a questionnaire of 20 questions and get answers to each question. It's absolute trash, I will tell you, Brian, because it doesn't help you design anything. Because most of these questions are formatted and the answers are also formatted. You rarely get genuine answers, genuine problems, because some
getting
of the
genuine view is it comes with time and getting comfortable with your audience and getting to know your audience. And a lot of valuable takeaways here, Swaroop. So you shared a huge amount of knowledge, and I know we were wrapping up, but clearly it's a passionate topic you and I could go on about. So looking at what's normal and who the minority is and the fact that that's changing, sure, I think the responsibility pillar is so clear. And being democratic is, I think, a really good way of looking at accessibility and having a distinction in your designs and in your experiences. So once again, I do want to say thank you to Swaroop. Swaroop, we've eclipsed over 30 minutes. And probably could easily schedule a part two. So I want to say thank you once again. And we'll look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Really appreciate it.